Hi, welcome to Radio Naturopath, the talk show about health and natural medicine. It's June 8th, 2020, live, to be rebroadcast June 10th, 2020 on 91.7 FM WHUS. I'm Fran Storch, ND, naturopathic physician, with my co-host Ron Meniza. While the UConn Student Union is closed, we are broadcasting live on Mondays at 10 o'clock a.m. on Facebook Live. Right here. Comment right below here to let us know you're here and ask questions. You can also email me at radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to the show at another time, you can check out our podcasts at whus.org, iTunes, and Spotify. You can also check out my Facebook page, Twitter, and Instagram at FranStorchND. The views expressed in this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. All right. So my latest thoughts on COVID-19. It really does kind of feel like we've moved into another phase. Of course, the state of Connecticut has moved into phase one of reopening, and we're going to go into phase two pretty soon, or maybe we're in phase two now. And then we're going to go into phase three on June 19th. You're going to be able to get, you're going to be able to go to the gym and get your nails done and get a tattoo and a bunch of other things. So one of the things I want to review is this virus is not over. There are still states where the virus is increasing in quantity. I wrote a little piece about what I've been seeing. I think it's a good idea not to be too cavalier right now, that you want to follow the directions of businesses where you go. If they ask you to wear a mask, please wear one. If you're wearing one, please be aware of whether it's covering your nose. I've seen a lot of people wearing masks and their nose is uncovered. And that doesn't make any sense, because if you have virus in your respiratory system, it's in your nose and in your mouth. And if you're not covering your nose, if you're not covering your nose, you might as well not wear a mask. The other thing I've been noticing is that when people talk, it tends to slip down. And this was true of me as well. And when I was aware that that was happening, I did stuff about it. So a couple things was, if you're wearing an ear loop mask, you can use a shoelace, a ribbon, or a lanyard to tie the loops behind your head. Because, you know, somebody gave you the ear loop mask and then you're figuring out, well, you know what, the ear loop mask doesn't really work for me because it's not snug enough and it doesn't stick to my head well enough. But my friend made it for me and it's so nice. So this is what I did, and I do have several nice ear loop masks that people made for me that tend to slip down, so I got some colorful, what I chose to get was very long, colorful shoelaces. I got them in, you know, bright pink and bright green, and they're very pretty. I got one in pale pink that goes with another one of them, and I just lace them through and tie it, and then the mask stays nice and snug, doesn't come down. I do have a couple of masks that have ties, and those work better for me because, as you can see, I talk a lot. I'm an active speaker. And when I speak, the mask tends to slip. And I noticed that that happens to other people, and because the masks don't stay comfortable, people tend to touch the masks a lot, which is what you really want to avoid doing. You should really, I know it's hard to not think about the fact that you have a mask on, but that is really what you want to do. You want it to stay in place and so that you don't have to think about it and you don't have to worry about it slipping. I also noticed that it slips and people don't notice that it slipped. So please be careful of this. If the point is that you're trying to prevent your droplets from getting into the air in front of you, you need to have a covering over your nose and your mouth. And this is going to get harder to do because the weather's getting warmer. And I see people complaining about feeling suffocated in their masks. It's going to be an interesting season because I'm just wondering if people are just going to get more cavalier about whether they wear the mask or not. And we're just going to see a lot of people not wearing them. And then you're going to have other people who are still very concerned who are just not going to feel like going out in public. And just be aware of that. If you're being cavalier about wearing a mask, there are people who are not doing that. And they're not going to want to be around you. And some people are not going to feel safe. And be aware that some people might come up to you and say something about it. I tend not to want to be confrontational. If somebody was in direct danger, I would probably do something about it. But I have not, like when I've seen people who are unmasked, I keep 6 feet away from them, and I might not choose to spend a lot of time around them. I don't know. You know, we have kind of a bubble in our office where, you know, at time, like when I'm by myself in my office, I make sure the windows are open. And I actually, after each patient, I spray disinfectant spray into the air and, of course, clean everything down. So if I'm by myself in my office with the door closed, then I will take the mask off. Like if you notice, if you've had a virtual consult with me, I'm not wearing a mask when I've got the consult going, but I've got the windows open and I've got, you know, disinfectant spray. And, you know, if there's been a patient before, that the place has been cleaned thoroughly before I do that. But, you know, when I'm in with a patient, we're 6 feet apart and we're both masked. And if the patient who is with me, if their mask is slipping, I instruct them to adjust it. And I'm as polite as I possibly can be. And I think what I'm also going to do is I'm going to provide them with cloth tape, and I'll explain that in a minute. So just please realize that if you're contagious, you can transmit the virus through your nose. Don't be too quick to spend time in large groups and mingle with people who've been exposed to a lot of people. The virus is still present. It's just that case levels have gone down in the state of Connecticut. And they really have gone down considerably. And they're, if you look at the maps of states and what their prevalence is and what the incidence is, the state of Connecticut is one of the states where the case numbers are declining, thank goodness. Oregon, Texas, and Arizona have seen marked spikes in cases, and other states still see cases rising. Fortunately, cases are declining in Connecticut, but some states are seeing rises like the Carolinas, both of them, Tennessee, Kentucky, Mississippi, Arkansas, and California. If you're outdoors and near people on trails or parks where it's hard to distance, wear your mask. You can wear a neck gaiter that you can pull up and down as necessary. It's still a good idea to take care of yourself, get outdoors, get plenty of rest, connect with people you love using technology, get counseling, and get medical care. Also, I wanted to talk about medical care. If you have any health issues not necessarily related to the coronavirus, this is a great time to take care of those. If you are able to go to hospitals or clinics, those facilities are using enhanced cleaning procedures and keep COVID-19 infected people away from the uninfected. If you're having a very concerning symptom like chest pain, shortness of breath, or severe abdominal pain, go to the ER. It's dangerous to wait until a concerning symptom turns into something much worse. You will be cared for properly, and you're very unlikely to catch the virus at a health facility. Health facilities are doing their best to keep safe. They're the ones who are wearing masks. They're using enhanced cleaning procedures. They're screening people before they come in. It's a really good idea to go. And the other thing is, if you have any other health conditions, you are more likely to not do well with the coronavirus. So it's a very good idea for you to take care of whatever it is you have, whether it's high blood pressure, cardiovascular disease, if you're worried about various conditions that you have, if you're concerned that you might have Lyme disease, absolutely. Just remember, people are getting outside more, and it is possible to get tick bites. In the last week, I've had two patients get a hold of me with tick bites that I've had to manage. So you could be bitten by ticks. And I just want to encourage you once again, if you go outside, do thorough tick checks when you're done, cover up, wear bug spray, you know, and I would say, I don't prefer to use DEET, but if there's nothing else around, if I'm in somebody's house and I forgot my bug spray and I don't have the good natural stuff that I have, I'm gonna use the DEET. I'd rather use DEET than get Lyme disease. You know, I'll use DEET, I wash off well, and then I take my liver herbs when I get home. But better to use DEET than get a tick bite. And all the myriad of things that can happen. And if you have tick-borne illness, again, you may be less likely to do well with the coronavirus if you do catch it. So protect yourself from tick-borne illness. And of course, you can use natural bug spray. I have a couple of favorites. If you get an insect repellent that has lemon eucalyptus in it, that's really good for mosquitoes. If it has rose geranium in it, it can be really protective against ticks. And if you have, there's also a product called Bio-UD, which is supposed to be as strong as DEET. And it's an extract of tomatoes. It doesn't smell great, but you can determine that. But I'll wear it. If I'm going for a nice walk in the woods, and I have beautiful woods behind my house, and I love to go there because right now all the flowers are blooming. We've got beautiful daisies in our yard, and the bluettes are finally on their way out, but we've had bluettes for like a month now. And people's gardens have beautiful flowers in them. But I love to go walk in our woods behind our house because there's, depending on the time of the season, there's different lovely flowers. And right now, the lady slippers are blooming. So if you want to go in the woods and find the lady slippers, the wild orchids, they're really gorgeous.
They really are.
And they're really special because it's like a treat when you find one of them. It's really nice. Anyway, so it's a good idea. So if you're going to get out deeper into the woods like that, you really want to make sure that you're covered in some good insect repellent. And like I said, my favorites are the Bio-UD. Bio-UD will protect against a lot of things. And Bio-UD is not going to be, like when you buy the product, it's not going to be called Bio-UD. It's going to be a brand that has Bio-UD as an ingredient. And I've got a couple, I've got a couple that I like to use. And I will tend to use the Bio-UD as well as the others. And like I just cover up with a bunch of stuff. The other thing I'm finding is, so this is for you cyclists out there. One of the things you may be finding is that, you're climbing some hills and there's those little gnats that love to fly. I actually don't know if they're gnats. They're little tiny insects that are the size of gnats. I don't know if they're technically gnats, but they're tiny little flies that love to fly around your face. And I notice them when I'm climbing a hill. Why would I notice them then? Because my speed is slow. And a lot of cyclists, I know that I determined this, that 7 miles an hour seems to be the magic speed. 7 miles an hour below are when those insects tend to bother you. And if you're going faster than 7 miles an hour, they can't keep up with you. So you're going to climb a hill. You're going to go 7 miles an hour or slower. Unless you're just really fit.
Or just go faster.
Yeah, you could go. Sure, you can. But, right. These days I'm not going, I'm hitting that 7 mile an hour below mark. So what you want to do is you want to make sure when you go out for your bike ride, you want to put some insect repellent, especially around your face. Put it directly on your face if it's comfortable. Put it on your neck. And then also you want to spray it right on your helmet. It'll sit on your helmet because the nice thing about your helmet is you won't sweat it off. And then you might be bothered a little bit less by those little insects.
You know, another thing I like to do is if I'm wearing a baseball cap, I just spray the baseball cap with it.
There you go. If you're wearing, that's a good idea.
Also, under the bill of the baseball cap, right where they come in by your eyes.
So that's a good idea. The only problem with that is now if you're going to spray insect repellent on that underneath the brim, if you sweat, some of us sweat more than others around our foreheads, and I'm one of those people. If I were to put it right in that spot, it would run down my eyes and it would burn my eyes. If you don't sweat a lot, so I'm a person who has to wear a headband underneath my helmet because I sweat so much on my head. Mm. My head itself sweats and my forehead sweats. So I can't go without that. Like, if I don't wear that, I get sweat in my eyes. I can't put anything on my forehead, and that's okay because it's covered. So I'm not going to get sunburned there because I've got a sweatband there. So if I'm going to be putting a spray on, it's going to be on my face directly underneath my eyes, and then I'm going to put it right on the helmet. If you don't sweat a lot in your, on your forehead, then what Ron's saying is a good idea. Put it on the hat. If you're wearing a cycling cap, you can put it on top of the brim. If you're like me, and it's going to sweat into your eyes, spray the put the bug repellent on top of the brim, not on the side that's going to go down into your eyes. So let's say hello to some people who are listening. Hey, Bill. Bill's going to try one of those frog rides from North Windham School. That's great. Good for you, Bill. Shout out to Chris DiPaolo, my old buddy from WBLQ. If you're in the Westerly area, you can listen to WBLQ down in Westerly. Hi to Larry and hi to Sharon. Thanks for listening. Okay. And
hi to Mike from Eastford also.
And Mike from Eastford. Hi to Mike from Eastford. So yeah, the thing is if we're doing watch parties, you have to figure out how to do it on several different screens. I think I figured it out for your show. All right. So let's move on. Let's like talk about something other than the coronavirus.
There's something other than the coronavirus?
There is, yeah.
It's hard to believe.
Yeah, well, before I move on, I want to do a shout out. A bunch of my friends went down to East Hartford yesterday and they participated in a Black Lives Matter protest. So I want to say I'm really grateful to them and thankful for them. I'm a person who has chosen not to do activities like that because I'm concerned about exposure to a lot of people because of the nature of the business I'm running. I'm concerned about exposure. So no judgment to people who are there and are social distancing and are wearing masks when they go to those rallies. Those rallies are necessary. And it's everybody's choice as to whether they feel their level of safety. People are going to have different comfort levels. And my position is I'm living with a 65-year-old guy. I am working on blood pressure issues myself. And I'm running a business where I see patients. So I'm choosing to support, but in other ways, in ways that don't involve me being exposed to 700 people. Lots of pride and joy and great graciousness. And you know, I'm very grateful to the people who did go. And they took their bikes and they rode out to East Hartford and supported the Black Lives Matter efforts. And I stand with you. And I'm thrilled that people are being supportive. And did you know that the Minneapolis Police Department, they're going to disband the Minneapolis Police Department?
Because, really?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. They're going to figure out other ways to have, they're going to do community efforts to take care of problems in neighborhoods. Yeah.
Wow, that's a strong stand.
Oh, yeah. It really is. Okay, so the next thing I want to talk about is screen time. Because I admit that I've been using a lot of screen. During this time, people are on social media a lot, so they're doing a lot of screen time. So the question is it bad for you? People use screen time all the time. They hang out together on screens. Right now, screen time is a way that people are connecting. So it's kind of necessary, but I find that because I'm not connected to the world in person as much, I'm looking to my screens to find out what's going on. There's an investigation. There's a documentary called Screenagers that a filmmaker named Delaney Rustin made, where she looked at how young people use digital devices and their effects on their brains. And she discovered that digital media gives you a drug-like effect. And I can attest to this because I will sometimes either eat a treat or play a video game. And I know that that's jacking up my dopamine. So that's very interesting. So it really does. Playing video games increase your dopamine. And so does eating a sweet treat in the moment anyway. In 2014, a Nielsen report found that adults log in a total of 11 hours of screen time a day. 11 hours!
11 hours?
Yeah.
At work, you're in front of a screen all day long.
Absolutely.
Right.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. So if you stare at a screen for extended periods of time, it can cause computer vision syndrome. You can get strained dry eyes, blurred vision, headaches, and poor posture can cause neck and shoulder pain. It can also affect your sleep. So Sarah Tomei at the University of Gothenburg says that the blue light from digital devices suppresses melatonin.
No way.
Yeah.
Wow.
That's really not good. That's not good for your immune system.
No.
Yeah. So one of the things you can do if you're in a position where you have to use a lot of screen time, you might want to take some melatonin. That might be something that can be helpful. Better to use the screens less. The other thing you can do is you can actually set. So if you like to read at night, or you like to look at your devices during the evening, and you read on your tablet or you play video games on your phone or whatever you're doing, you can set your device to take out blue light. My device goes on removing blue light from something like 9:30 at night till 7 in the morning.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
No kidding.
Yeah, and you can set that. There's a setting on your phone that will allow you to do that. So dopamine, the feel-good hormone, is part of your brain's pleasure and reward circuits. As I said, playing video games turns on those similar regions as links to cravings for drugs. And so, and I feel like, you know, it's probably less harmful to play a video game than it is to take an addictive drug. And yet it can become addictive.
Mm-hmm.
I know that I definitely enjoy seeing those little colors and shapes blow up, because my favorite video games are the Kinect 3 kinds, you know, the cookie jams and the Candy Crush, and
mm-hmm.
those are the games that I like to play, really, you know,
completely
intense stuff.
Mindless and perfect.
Yeah. I know, and I keep get there's these games with that, like there's this game called Township that you can play, and it's where these you'll see people and animals, and you move doorways, and if they go one way, this happens, and you go the other way, this happens, and they can either get hurt or they can, you know, they can pass through a course. And I don't want to do that. I like blowing up shapes and colors and things. It's more fun. So your overall health, more if you're sitting in front of a screen for a long time, you're getting excited, your cortisol is going up. And what happens when your cortisol rises and you're not using it to exercise or do things? You're going to raise your blood sugar. And if your blood sugar is then not used to go do activity, you're going to store it as fat. So you can increase your weight, your risk of obesity and heart disease, unfortunately. So if you spend a lot of it's not just about what you are doing, it's about what you're not doing. And it's the fact that when you're on your screens, you're hyped up. I mean, the reason you're playing your video games is to get you excited. And if you're using your screen for work, of course, you're kind of hyped up while you're doing your work. And if you're doing that and you don't have a balance of getting exercise with that, you're increasing your cortisol. And if your cortisol rises without you getting activity, then you're looking at inflammation, heart disease, obesity, unfortunately. And that, you know, that's kind of the sitting around factor. During the preteen and teen years, the brain goes through a lot of transformations. And so tweens and teens are very susceptible to the amounts of screen time and brain function and their emotional well-being. Kids and young adults who spend a lot of time on TV and video games are twice as likely to suffer from attention disorders. So that's the other thing. Regardless of your age, I'm going to say that if you do use a lot of screens, you're going to have more issues with attention disorders.
I just shifted all my apparatus over to night shift on the Apple products.
Oh, you were able to do that?
Yep. That's if you're looking for the way to do it, you go to your settings and go to night shift, and night shift will actually eliminate that blue light.
All the time?
Only when you program it to.
Right. Okay. So you did it for a certain.
I did it from 9 p.m. until 6 a.m.
Yeah, and I have it set like something like that as well.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
All right. So if you spend all your time online, you don't have as good social skills. It can build community and foster creativity, but people will hide behind screens to avoid tricky or awkward conversations. Rather than challenge themselves to do it in person, they go to the screen for a diversion. I've also found that certain people who are introverted, they are more chatty on the screens than they are in person. And they're more intimate on screens than they are in person. So screens have been something of a boon to people who are introverts, that you might hear from them because they feel safer communicating with you if they're not face to face.
Right.
The other side of that, of course, is people can be a lot meaner and a lot more rude on screens.
Or it can be interpreted that way also.
That's true. That you don't know.
It's kind of a funky read that you get when someone is on screen.
Right. So when when you are looking at a screen, when you're interpreting something that somebody is saying to you from a screen, you don't know what they mean because you don't see their voice, their face, or their inflection. I have seen in the past, like, I'll make a comment and somebody who might not actually say that to your face because they can see your reaction. So for example, you say, I think that Melissa Rauch should play this character in this show. And another person say, no, absolutely not. I think that's the absolute wrong person. So you might not be, if somebody's standing in front of you, you might not violently disagree with them and just completely invalidate their position. And I remember seeing that and that something like that happened to me. And I looked at that and said, that person is rude. They're just not thinking about, you know, how I might feel about that and that's something that's interesting to me and that might be valid for me. She just completely, you know, shot down my position without caring. So people do that. I also feel like people are more likely to get in fights. That's why you see all this vitriol on Facebook and Twitter, because people are hiding behind screens. You can accuse somebody of having inferior intelligence if they're sitting in Texas and you're in New Jersey, you know, so people can be meaner to each other. That's really hard. And so there's a way that social media has inflamed interactions. And that's something that's a detriment of screen time. So emotions and personality. In 2010, researchers found that kids who logged more than 2 hours a day in front of a computer or TV had a higher chance of psychological difficulties in a standard questionnaire. Young men who play violent video games are linked to more aggression and less sensitivity to others. And imaging studies found that internet addiction and game addiction can shrink the brain regions responsible for planning and executive functions, empathy, compassion, and impulse control. It's really unclear, yes, how quickly or easily the brain returns to a normal state after you stop playing video. Well, the thing is, when you're on screens and you're playing video games, the screen is doing a lot of the thinking for you. Yeah, you're making decisions. Your decisions are very easy. It's like, and that's another reason why, you know, it can be stress reducing to play Candy Crush, you know, because I don't have to make complex decisions about, when I'm taking care of a patient, there's a lot of complex decision making that goes on at all times. And I don't know if people realize that when you're a physician, whether you're accessing me, through video chat or whether I'm in person with you or whether I'm making a decision for you because you've made a phone call. I have a joke that I've said to my patients for years. It's a patient who is trying to make it seem like they're not taking up a lot of your time will say, quick question. My joke is there are no quick questions,
right,
especially not in naturopathic medicine. And maybe that's because of the nature of naturopathic medicine. There are really no quick questions, because if you ask a question, you have to figure out the context of that question. And there's a lot of things that go into that. So when you're looking at the person, you're seeing how they're actually presenting. When your patient is sitting with you, you're not just listening to what they're saying. You're listening to how they're saying it, how they're holding their body, what their inflection is, even how they smell, how they dressed. You are looking at everything there is to see about them and to sense about them. You're using all your senses to figure out what's going on. And I know for me, if somebody asks me a question, even if the answer is just take Solicia 6C 3 times a day, if there's a lot that went into that decision, I thought about what's going on with the person right now. What are all the things going into it? What are all the symptoms? What would be easy for the patient? What would be easy for them to get? There's a lot that goes into that. So how does that link to screens? I think one of the things that's concerning about screens is that it can detract from the depth of interaction that you can have with another person. And people who primarily interact through screens, and this is another interesting piece. It's kind of like that tribe that their true life, they consider their true life when they're sleeping, because they consider their dream life to be their actual life. And 8 hours a day is just what you need to do to maintain the dream life. Whoa. I think there are people who live on the internet who they're
okay.
And I've made this observation before. So Here's my analogy, and bear with me on this one.
Yeah, go.
So my analogy is you have musicals, right? Say musicals like, say, Fiddler on the Roof or The Music Man, where the songs in the musical are, they are points in time in the musical, and they're just singing about an aspect. You have the action that's leading up to the song, and then you have the actual song that happens. There was love all around, et cetera, et cetera. And that, and leading up to that, and it's a distinct song that's in a moment in time. And there was a lot of dialogue and action that led up to Howard Hill and Marion singing that lovely song. Whereas you have other musicals that are operettas, like Miss Saigon, where an operetta is where the music advances the plot. So here's my analogy. My analogy is like, we all use social media in varying ways. I attempt to use social media. Happy birthday, Michael. I hope you had a wonderful birthday yesterday. Love you. All right. So when you're using social media, well, the way I like to use social media is I kind of use it as a photo album. So if I do something fun and I take pictures, it's a great place to put it on social media and have everybody look at it and me look at it and share it and have a few laughs about it. And that's that. Especially right now, because I like to go, my favorite thing to take pictures of is flowers. If I figure out a way to take a picture of birds, I might get to do that, but birds are a lot harder. Flowers are just so easy because they'll stand there and let you take a picture of them, you know, and they're so pretty and they're so rewarding, and you don't have to be very talented to take great pictures of flowers because they do a lot of the work for you. So it's fun. And I'll take pictures of me in a pretty spot with my bicycle. And, you know, yet the other day I went to a bridge to inspect it to see if it was passable. And it was only sort of passable, but I could stand on it. So I took videos of the brook going under it. And that's my jam, you know. That's what I like to take pictures of.
Yeah.
So it's like I'm taking pictures of nice things in my life and throwing them on Facebook. There are people who really spend time, they advance their life living on the internet, where they have conversations and activities and conversations with friends. You'll see a post and then there's an argument that goes on underneath it. You see a post that people are making plans with each other underneath the post, where they're actually living on the social media, where they're advancing their life and they're citing manifestos and putting up articles. And the social media is actually part of their actual life. That it's not just, you know, a place to put up, you know, articles or post our show or, you know.
Or and produce that's, a show.
And I don't want to say that there's anything wrong with that because that's the way it is. I think the younger people are, the more likely they are to do that. That social media is like actually, oh my goodness, I didn't get liked on social media. Nobody looked at my post. My post isn't very, you know, I'm like, oh, that's interesting. Nobody looked at that. Oh, but some people did look at this one. All right. I'm going to go for a bike right now. You know, I think we don't care as much because we didn't grow up with social media in the same way. It came to us when we were much older. And I think that kids got on very young. So it really is part of their lives in a way that it's not ours. And there's a judgment. Is that like you and I at our ages, because we're really old, we have a value judgment of it's important to be able to interact personally. And we enjoy personal interaction. And I wonder if the value judgment of being being able to interact personally has gone down as younger people are more active on social media, that they see social media, as I said, like an operetta. It is their actual life. You know, and that's why I tend not to argue on social media. I might like something strong, you know, that I'm interested in. But, you know, I tend to respond to pictures of birds and flowers and simchas, you know, joyous events in people's lives.
Simchas.
Simcha. Yeah, simcha. It's in Jewish for a joyous event in life. Like
okay.
Like a birth or a wedding or a bar mitzvah.
Okay.
That's a simcha. Yeah.
Okay.
And you know what you drink at simchas?
Not Manischewitz wine.
Mazel tov cocktails.
Oh God.
So There was a media post, and I'm not sure which outlet it came from, but somebody was talking about, unfortunately, at one of the rallies, somebody that people were throwing Molotov cocktails, and the caption was "Mazel Tov cocktails." And Jewish people everywhere got a good laugh out of that. And I posted it because a couple different friends posted it. And I had to post how Mazel Tov cocktails, that's all they serve at Simchas. Oh. You know, but they hit you with a bang.
Yes. Oh, that's bad.
Yeah.
That's bad.
So I'm sure that I have to look up Mazel Tov cocktails and find out if there's a recipe for one, because I'm sure that if somebody thought of it,
I'm sure
it already exists.
I'm sure there's a Jewish bar somewhere that serves
or them. Somebody has a recipe for a Mazel Tov cocktail. Yeah. So, so did you know that 2 hours of TV is linked to weight gain in youth? Two or more hours of TV a day is linked to weight gain, higher cholesterol, and blood pressure. Yeah. So.
Okay.
So young children are using screens a lot, and 92% of babies used a mobile device before their first birthday, and 35% have their own mobile device at 2, and 75% up to 4. And I know that,
wow.
You know, so for example, when I have parents who come in for visits, and the visit may be for the parent, but they had to bring the kids. Or the visit may be for the child, and the child's not really old enough to participate in the visit. So to keep the kid occupied, they hand him a screen.
So. Mazel Tov cocktail.
There it is.
Fill a mixing glass with ice. Combine with 1/4 ounce of lavender syrup. The gin liqueur or sloe gin and the lemon juice in a mixing glass. Stir briefly, then strain into a champagne flute. Top with chilled champagne or white sparkling wine.
So it's an enhanced champagne.
It's real.
Well, it's real. I'm sure that's not the only recipe.
Right.
It sounds yummy.
This is from the Washington Post.
Well, it probably just came out because that caption went viral.
Yeah, that's really funny.
And so it's got lavender syrup and what did you say, lemon? And
I would pour
champagne over it. Sounds delicious.
Yep. That's
especially because the lavender syrup, that interests me.
Right.
All right, so language skills. Research shows that TV can hamper language development in kids by displacing time spent interacting with caregivers. So if you're watching TV a lot, you're not talking to people as much, so you're not getting your language skills as well. So, you know, if you're putting your toddler on a screen, they're simply not talking as much. And emotional development. If a child is going through some things and you don't work it out with them and you hand them a screen instead, the kid's not going to learn how to regulate boredom and they're not going to be able to do much else besides play with their screen. And I noticed during the pandemic, I have had a difficult time being motivated to do stuff. Mm. But I'm getting my basic stuff done, but I'm figuring out what am I actually doing in my life right now? Because I'm not particularly working on a hobby or playing music or doing some of the other things that I like to do, aside from riding my bike and doing my fitness and reading stuff I need to know for natural medicine and running my business.
Right.
You're
having a life reflection moment.
I am. Although, again, maybe I underestimate how much I do. And I'm just kind of trying to go along with it because I figure if I get inspired to do something, that time will come. And it is quite possible that I've been going so long and so hard that things are a little bit quieter now. Maybe I just need some rest. And I should start by just reading. You know,
rest is good. We've been sleeping more.
To read. We have been sleeping more.
Yeah.
Yes. That's true. And let's talk about sleep.
Okay.
Screen use among children it gives children shorter, lower quality sleep. There was a 2014 review paper of school-age kids and adolescents that correlated screen time with poor sleep, and they saw especially strong links between screen time and delays in bedtime, as well as a shorter period of time spent to sleep. So, you know, using screens will affect your sleep. And the more TV children watch, as we said, the more they're likely to weigh. So more screen time means less time for activities that are good for your health and well-being. So the more you're spending on screens, the less time you might be going for a walk or taking an actual photo or talking to a friend in person figuring out how to eat more healthfully. There's a lot of things that your screens could be taking away from you, and screens really suck you in. They're very easy to look at. They're very easy to draw you in. They're very enticing, and especially if you're looking at a lot of videos. I find that my attention span, if an article is too long, I don't want to read it for very long.
Right. Yeah. Right.
And then you tend to go on to something else.
Yep.
And so it really, and then things that don't hold your attention, you tend to get bored more easily. And so you have to be careful of that. And I think, one of the things to do around this is to try to figure out things that you like to do that don't involve screens. I like to just sit in my yard and look at the pretty yard right now. It's really nice out there.
Yeah,
go outside and look at nature and be in nature and fill your eyes with nature. That's a good thing to do. Read actual books, and whether you're reading the actual book on a screen or instead of just scrolling through your Facebook feed or all the news feeds or all the things that you look at, try reading an actual book, and you can read it in, and if the screen sucks you in, by reading it on a Kindle, reading it on an app, consider just reading a paper book. This would be a time to get back to, a paper magazine or a paper book, and then you're not as drawn in by the pixels. And if that's not convenient for you, I find that it's different for me to read a book on my, if I read a book on a tablet, it's not that different for me than reading a physical paper book. And I find that tablet is easy to take everywhere, and I have a number of books I could be going through at once, and I can carry them all with me in the tablet, and that works nicely for me. And you can read magazines, but try to stick to one magazine or one article and treat it like it's an actual magazine or a book if you're using a tablet. So we have Wes, who is watching his cow mow the lawn, and it's very relaxing. Yeah.
Watching the cow mow the lawn is relaxing.
I think it's very relaxing.
I like that, Wes. That's good.
So here's a big shout out to my friends at The Herd on Zwift. I'm a member of The Herd. And so because I've been doing more IRL rides in real life, I'm passing cows. And so, of course, when you go by a cow, you have to talk to them by mooing. And then now and again, I'll take pictures of the cows. And we have a lot of cows. There's got to be a lot of cows per capita in Connecticut, especially in this section of Connecticut.
Over here, for sure. Yeah. We have much more of a dairy farm type thing going on over in eastern Connecticut.
And we have cows two doors down that way, right? And we have some cows. Our neighbors have cows. We have two farms across the street from each other, down the street from us, and they're a lot of fun. And one of them is guinea hens, so we cheer the guinea hens on and we say, "Eat more ticks, eat more ticks." All right. So anyway, so watch your screen time. Screen time can be a hard thing for your health. And it's a good idea to watch how much screen time you're using and see if you can do other things and see if you can do something that's not using a screen. If you have any kind of a hobby that doesn't use a screen at all, like playing music or woodworking or knitting or crocheting or making masks for people, anything like that. All right. So now I wanted to jump over to something else that's interesting, something that I'm working on now. Ron has cattle inventory by state.
Inventory
all right,
by
let's,
state.
Let's hear how many cows per capita we've got
in Connecticut, states. Where we have 3,596,000 people,
mm-hmm.
We have 47,000 cows.
Yeah.
We are ranked 47th out of 50 in the nation.
So we don't have a lot of cows
in
Connecticut.
We don't have a lot of cows.
You know what
the worst state is for cows per capita?
The lowest, you mean?
The lowest, yes.
Alaska.
No, it's New Jersey.
New Jersey is the least cows per capita?
That is correct.
And I will tell you that there are a lot of cows in New Jersey. How many cows are there in New Jersey?
29,000.
There's not none, because I see them in New Jersey.
But we have more.
Right.
And then the big one, the big state, is South Dakota.
South Dakota is the most cows per capita?
That is correct.
That's because they don't have a lot of people.
It's true. You're right, because they have 844,000 people. So,
yes.
And they have 3.6 million cows.
Right. So there's a lot of herding going on in South Dakota.
But,
and the few people that live there, a lot of them herd.
But Texas has like 10 million 900,000 cows. They're the biggest state for numbers of cows.
Oh, they have more cows
altogether. So they have
more
cows, but they're ranked
but not 18th per capita.
As cows per capita.
Per capita. Yeah. All right.
So there's a little cow information for you.
So, but we have, I think I'm aware, I mean, we went on a bike ride and we saw six places where there were cows. Because we live in the part of the state where the cows are.
Exactly. You're going to see more out here than you're going to see in other parts of the state.
Sure.
You may see more up in northwestern Connecticut.
Yeah.
But I think northeastern Connecticut is still, or all of eastern Connecticut is still rural enough so that there's still dairy farms.
A lot of cows. And in New Jersey, again, there's not zero cows.
Right.
I tell you, there's a lot of cows. It's just that a lot of New Jersey is suburban or urban, so there you're not going to see as many per capita, because the thing is, New Jersey has millions and millions of people. There's way more people in New Jersey than there are in, I mean, we have what, 3.5 million people in Connecticut.
Yeah, and New Jersey has almost 9 million.
Yeah,
it's at least three times as many
people.
Yeah.
Oh, and Scott, shout out to Scott. Scott says that there are a lot of meat plants in the Dakotas.
Yes,
so there are beef farming out in the Dakotas. Good point.
Good morning, Scott.
Yes. All right. So, okay. So something that's dear to my heart, I wanted to talk about some joint rebuilding stuff. And I found that if you're working your body hard and, basically if you're working your body hard and you're getting older, that you kind of have to put some focus on taking care of your joints. And so if you want to have less joint pain, you want your tendons to not hurt, and you want things to not break as much, you kind of have to do something about it. And I find that the more I do about it, the better I feel. And what's really exciting is it doesn't take very much time for me to feel better. So there's a few simple things that you can do. So let's talk about glucosamine first. Now, people have heard of glucosamine, glucosamine sulfate, glucosamine hydrochloride for years. And long ago, there was a study, probably 20, 30 years ago, there was a study on glucosamine that found that if you took glucosamine sulfate and you took 1,500 milligrams a day, you're taking a nutrient that helps you to build chondroitin, which is one of the biggest ingredients of joints, that's in the ingredients of your collagen. So the joint space, if you take more glucosamine, your body will build more joint. And the sweet spot seemed to be 1,500 milligrams a day. I have seen in my practice that people who are smaller don't necessarily need to take 1,500 milligrams, and they do get relief. One of the things you obviously want to see is a reduction in pain in your joints, whether it's in your back and your knees or your elbows. Wherever you happen to have the joint pain, and or your hips especially, and you're more likely to have a degenerative condition if the discomfort in a joint is uneven. So if you have discomfort in one joint versus the other, it's more likely to be degeneration. Whereas if you have bilateral pain, pain on both sides, it doesn't mean there isn't degeneration, but it's more likely to be inflammatory. And there is an inflammatory component to joint degeneration. So glucosamine can be helpful in rebuilding joints. Your body will take that nutrient in and will use it to make chondroitin sulfate, which is a major component of your joint spaces. So the thing with glucosamine, though, is it's not directly anti-inflammatory. It's anti-inflammatory in that if you have a healthier joint capsule, you're not going to have as much rubbing and resultant inflammation. But it's not an anti-inflammatory. It's indirect, that if you have a healthier joint, you're going to have less inflammation. So things that directly affect inflammation are going to be things like your curcumin and your boswellia and ginger and rosemary and fish oil. Those things all reduce inflammation. Then Collagen is so popular now, and people do find that when they take collagen, if it's a very absorbable collagen, it does give joint relief. And I'm finding this for myself, taking collagen peptides. If you do collagen peptides combined with an anti-inflammatory, you can get relief very quickly. And I find that if I'm good about taking my collagen peptides several days running, I will have more comfort in my joints within a few days. Now, how this affects, if this is actually affecting my joints directly, I'm not sure. When I take collagen peptides, I also tend to take anti-inflammatories. And I'm not talking about pharmaceuticals. I'm talking about fish oil and evening primrose oil, flaxseed oil, and sometimes black cumin seed oil. And I also take curcumin. And so I've got a bunch of anti-inflammatory compounds on board as well. And I'm also taking antioxidants, like I'm taking curcumin with resveratrol in it. And resveratrol is a very nice antioxidant that comes from grapes and other dark purple produce. And so the collagen peptides, what they do is that because they're in peptide form, so protein has quaternary structure. That means there are four levels of structure of proteins. And the highest level structure is the disulfide bonds. Disulfide bonds, what gives your curly hair its curl. So there are bonds in my hair that are sticking together that are giving it this curly shape. If I heat up my hair and pull it, then it gets straight and I'm taking out the disulfide bonds. So that's the highest level of structure of protein. The third level of structure of protein is polypeptides. So polypeptides are peptide chains of amino acids that are strung together to create the nature of the protein. When you take out the disulfide bonds, now you have a two-dimensional protein that's easier to cleave. So if you break it down further using enzymes, using proteolytic enzymes, you cut up the polypeptides into peptides. Now you have chains of amino acids that are much easier to absorb. And your body's going to take those polypeptides. It's easier to take the polypeptides and then break them down into amino acids and then rebuild them as your collagen. So collagen peptides can be useful that way. And if you take the collagen peptides with proteolytic enzymes, then your body can break down the polypeptides into amino acids and then rebuild them the way it likes. Also, if the collagen peptides are in a shape that your body wants to use, your body just take those peptides and put them right into your joints and rejoin them in a way that works for your body. And so the collagen peptides tend to come from other animals. They'll tend to come from fish, or they will be bovine from cows. And that's where they generally come from. If you make bone broth, you can make bone broth out of whatever animal you have bones for. It could be poultry, it could be beef, it could be venison, and you're going to get polypeptides from, you're going to get collagen from those animals. I would say, now people use bone broth and they do very well with it. And if you take bone broth regularly and you find that you have better joint comfort and your digestive system works better, then that's great. You might get, some people will get better results from taking a concentrated collagen supplement. So if that's something you want to do, you can do that. There are collagen peptides that are bonded together with anti-inflammatories. They tend to be more expensive. If you get a plain collagen peptide, it's probably a good idea to take it along with an anti-inflammatory, and then you'll get some reduction in pain and inflammation. And you can buy collagen peptides on their own. Just make sure that they're organic, they're from free-range animals or from wild-caught animals, and that they're, and if they have a hydrolytic or a proteolytic enzyme in them, that's even better. Not necessary. Not 100% necessary, but if you have trouble absorbing, and that's one of your issues, you might want to take a proteolytic enzyme along with your collagen peptides. As I said, sometimes collagen peptides will come with an enzyme in them. And so you can also take protein powders that have amino acids that tend to build collagen. And one of the amino acids that tends to build collagen is glycine. And we talked about that last week. Glycine is something that you can take that will encourage your body to make more collagen. I'm starting to think that glycine gives you interesting dreams. It definitely helps you to sleep better, but I'm also wondering if it gives you vivid dreams, because when I take my glycine, that's what happens to me. I'm actually not entirely sure if it's the glycine, because I'm taking a couple of other amino acids, but I suspect because glycine can improve, it reduces pain and it's calming and it does affect your brain, so I'm assuming that it's also giving me dreams and it's increasing my serotonin function. So I'm seeing interesting things behind the eyelids. Combination glandulars can be helpful. So if you can get glandular products that combine trace minerals with different kinds of glandulars, that they might again have collagen in them, or they might have ligament tissue from animals in them, those can be really helpful too. And I have one that I like to take that comes from a well-known company, and I find it really helpful. So you should talk to your health practitioner about what some of those glandulars might be. You have to be a little careful with glucosamine, because it can cause an increase. I didn't know this. It can increase intraocular pressure. And in the study where that was seen, the people would start with without high intraocular pressure. High intraocular pressure is what glaucoma is. If you have too much pressure in going through your eyes, it can damage the blood vessels to your eyes. It can damage your vision. And if you have a patient with glaucoma, you might want to rethink taking glucosamine. And it is possible that it's not necessary to take glucosamine, because the collagen peptide supplements are so good right now. Also, if you have a family history of glucosamine, so that can be an issue. All right. So we only have a little bit of time left. I think I'm going to wrap it up and say to you, think about, what collagen peptides you want to do. The other thing is, one of the things we did yesterday, we came back from our long bike ride and we consumed a protein shake right away. I think that was a good idea. I think it's a habit we should start getting into.
I agree.
Once again.
Yeah, it was
because
really good.
One of the things that's happening is when you have just done heavy exercise, your body is a little bit inflamed and it's ready for repair. So within that half hour that you just got back from your workout or ride or whatever you've done, your body is more likely to absorb the amino acids that you might get from a protein shake. So pick your favorite amino acid. I'm telling you, if you're not dairy intolerant, I'm a big fan of whey protein. If you are dairy intolerant, then something that's vegan is fine. If you want to do beef protein, that's fine. You can get bone broth protein now. You can get egg protein. You can get pea protein, which is another favorite of mine. As I'm working on blood pressure, that's something that can strengthen your kidneys and help to lower your blood pressure. All right. So I'm going to send you out next week. We're going to talk a bit about getting out in the sun and sunscreen and foods you can eat to help you to prevent you from getting sunscreen. All right. So thank you for listening. You've been listening to Radio Naturopath, the talk show about health and natural medicine. I am Fran Storch, ND, naturopathic physician, with my co-host, Ron Meniza. You can email me with questions and comments at radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to the show at another time, you can check out our podcast at whus.org, iTunes, and Spotify. You can also leave questions or comments at my Facebook page, Twitter, and Instagram, at Fran Storch, ND. The views expressed on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. Thank you for listening to Radio Naturopath, your show where you can learn about the best of science and nature. We'll be back next week with more Radio Naturopath on 91.7 FM, WHUS stores, and WHUS.org.